Welcome to Call Us Mommy Podcast, where we get real about mom life, relationships, and careers. I'm Tiana, a single mom of three.
And I'm Marielle, a married mom of four. We're both on a mission to empower you not to settle in any area of life.
We are back with another episode of Call Us Mommy, and today we have a special guest that I am super excited about. If you follow me on Instagram, I share her things almost daily on my stories. But her name is Allison Hempsey, and she is from The Honest Peach on Instagram. But I will let her jump in and give you a better introduction of herself.
Thanks, Tiana. That was a great introduction. I told you via stories that I wanted you to be my PR specialist, and I meant that. I'm really excited to be here to talk to you ladies. I was trained and educated as a psychotherapist, and I actually was practicing for about a year before we had to move, and we've moved, I think, three or four times since. So my husband's in the Air Force, and we move all of the time. So that was posing a problem in my career, right? Because I can't build up a private practice and then move and repeat. So I got pregnant. I was like, what am I going to do with my life? I don't know. And then I had a baby, and postpartum hit me like freight train. I'm sure a lot of the moms that listen will identify with that. I was wholly unprepared, and I'm a perfectionist at heart. And in life, I thought if I was prepared enough, I could, you know, beat anything, do anything. And motherhood was like, okay, no. This little tiny baby has a mind of her own and is going to do what she wants. So I really struggled in the postpartum period. And I was thinking to myself, as a psychotherapist, if I'm struggling this much, like, how is everyone else faring who doesn't like study this and do this for a living? So during my child's naps, I built the Embrace model to first heal myself, which is based on this biopsychosocial spiritual model. And really it was like, moms have so many unique needs in addition to mental health needs, right? Like, everyone talks about postpartum depression and anxiety. But we also need to take into account that your relationship changes, your body changes. And you go through this huge upheaval in your identity and who you are and who am I now in addition to who I was before. So long story short, I created this Embrace model. I got on Instagram and I started working with moms individually and then in groups on becoming your best self in motherhood and prioritizing yourself so you can show up for your kids.
I love that. And this is perfect timing because I'm like really struggling with starting over and like thinking like, what if I lose myself? Like, how am I going to be able to get through postpartum? And Ariel's like, you've had three kids already. Like, you did this in a much unhealthier environment. And then you just had a baby recently as well, right?
I did. Yep. I did. And I am going through it again, which is so humbling, right? To go through again, what I like coach moms through. Mm-hmm. And this postpartum has been a world of a difference. Number one, because I got on Zoloft preemptively. Thank you. I call it vitamin Z. Thank you, vitamin Z, for that. So that was really helpful. But I was just talking to my husband last night about it. I'm, you know, easing back into work, but it's that push and pull of like, oh, my baby's only 5 months. Like, I really want to spend more time with him, but also I really want my business to pick up again. And I've been gone for, you know, 6 or 7 months on maternity leave. And so I'm going through all of those things again and reprioritizing again. And, you know, it's a process for sure.
Yeah. It's also perfect timing because our last episode, we talked about postpartum and like the things, like basically our postpartum stories and like how they've been, like what Tiana's worried about for her next postpartum journey. And then like what we didn't feel like we were prepared for. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the episode, we were like, we apologize. Like, we feel like we just got on here and we're like, don't have kids, you know, but it was really not supposed to be like that. It was just supposed to be, this is what we experienced and what we didn't know we would experience. And like, maybe this is how you could prepare yourself. So I love that you said that, how like you, even knowing what you know, you didn't know a whole lot. Yeah. And so I think that these conversations are so important because we're here, like obviously in our own ways thriving, but like we did have to take steps to get there. And obviously you said like you struggled, Tiana and I struggled for a while. And like, I think you still have those moments, but it's just like finding the ways to get through those moments, to be able to like actually thrive in your motherhood. So I love what you do. I was 21 when I had my first baby. Tiana, you were what, 19?
I was barely 19.
Oh yeah. You guys are young mamas. And how old
were you, Allison?
I was 30.
Okay. So yeah. I love that. That's like very, like we can all
different speak on experiences. Differently. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would love to hear from you, like how you experience like a loss of identity in your motherhood, because I know for me and like Tiana, we talked about this, how it was hard for us to find our identity after we became moms because of motherhood just being a life-changing event. But also like we were basically children becoming adults. Yep. And so we were finding new identities either way. And so like to have that all at once was definitely an interesting thing to experience. So I would be curious, like your thoughts on that. And I know it's like an ongoing thing, but.
Yeah, no, I commend y'all for being moms in your 20s, because I was a hot fucking mess in my 20s, you know, like I mean, from the outside, I wasn't, you know, I got my bachelor's, I got my master's, I got married, but like emotionally and in this whole identity piece, you know, for me, my 20s were about finding that. Mm-hmm. And conversely, I feel like that almost made motherhood hard too for me, because mm-hmm. I was so set in my routines. I had all the freedom in the world. Like when that all got taken away from me, I was like, what the hell? Like mm-hmm. I can't get up and go to the gym, and I can't do things for myself that I was like really rooted in doing. I mean, I remember, you know, 3 a.m. like feeding this baby for like the fourth time. And I was literally thinking like, what did we do? Like, what? I'm not ready for this. Like,
yeah.
Right. And that doesn't mean that I'm not a good mom or that I don't love my baby. It was just a huge shock to the system. So for me, I think that's what made it hard about having a baby a little later in life, was that I thought I was this one person, and then motherhood just like mm-hmm. crumbled my sense of identity. Mm-hmm. And have you guys heard of the term matrescence?
I haven't.
No. So it's a period in, it basically describes the period in a woman's life of like transitioning into motherhood. And mm-hmm. it sounds like adolescence for a reason, right? In adolescence, your hormones are fucking wild. Like your body's changing, all these things out of your control. You're really emotional. It's sounds pretty similar to like becoming a mom, right? Mm-hmm. In adolescence, everyone's understanding. They're like, oh, teenagers, you're going through a lot. But when you become a mom, you're supposed to just flip a switch mm-hmm. and know exactly what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And it should come naturally, which it doesn't for a lot of women. So I love talking about matrescence, because not everyone experiences postpartum anxiety and depression, but every mom will go through matrescence. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it describes every woman's transition into motherhood. So I think it's important that we talk about that and normalize it, because moms think that they go into motherhood thinking, okay, so I'm either normal or I have postpartum anxiety and depression.
Mm-hmm. And that's there so true. Is
such a huge, you know, it's a spectrum, really, how difficult it is.
Yeah, I've never heard of, I love that. Matrescence, is that how you say it?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I know, I'm gonna have to go research this now.
I know.
I'll go down the rabbit hole.
There's an because amazing, I would go ahead.
I was gonna say, I would assume if you struggle with PPA or PPD, that would affect that transition too, right?
Yeah, they're all, it's all correlated, mm-hmm. right? For sure. And I think a lot of people think that if they struggle, that means that it's postpartum anxiety or depression. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the DSM is kind of like, do you guys know what the DSM is?
We know nothing. So just tell us everything.
Tell us it all.
You guys are like,
yeah, I'm getting closer and
take it all in.
Yes. So the DSM is a manual that psychotherapists and mental health professionals use to diagnose certain mental health issues.
Okay.
So in order to qualify for a diagnosis of postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety, you have to meet certain criterion, right? Mm-hmm. And that's really it. So my point here is the DSM is kind of like, it's not the best, right? It's not like we can take a blood sample and be like, you have postpartum depression for right. sure, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you have X amount of symptoms for X amount of days, and it's interfering in your life, work, relationships, whatever, right? So I think a lot of moms are like, I don't feel great. I have postpartum depression, or I have postpartum anxiety. You know, mm-hmm. I always tell my moms, the diagnosis isn't important to me. The symptoms are important to me. Like, what are you feeling? Right. And how can we feel better? And then you add in birth trauma, you add in societal expectations on moms, you add in your relationship with your partner changing hugely. I mean, how a mom journeys into motherhood and doesn't have this huge shock, I would be surprised.
I love that you phrase it that way, because it's very much saying like, okay, this might be how you're feeling, but even if we have a title on or whatever, it's not normal. Yeah. So let's come up with a plan to get you through it and to the other side. So how do you think, or Tiana, what were you going to say before we move on? Because I don't want to.
I was going to say, I love that she said that, because on our last episode, we talked about like, you know, your 6-week checkup, at least here where we mm-hmm. live, is like basically like a 3-questionnaire. It may change in the last 5 years or so, but I was like, oh, well, I don't have any of these, or at least I don't have them right now. So like, I don't have PPA or PPD, but then a couple years later, I'm like, holy shit, I have anxiety.
Yeah. The questionnaires are, you know, they suck in a lot of ways, but they're also not used correctly. So really it's a screening so that you get a referral to someone who specializes in mental health. Like, medical doctors do not specialize in mental health. And I know, you know, sometimes OBGYNs misunderstand things, like if we talk about suicide, or if we talk about I'm wanting to hurt myself. Having thoughts of harming yourself doesn't mean that you want to kill yourself. Mm-hmm. Right? But if an OBGYN hears that, they're like, oh God, okay, I got to refer you to somewhere. We need it, like, right? So it should be used as a tool. You're flagged as saying, hey, it sounds like you need some extra support. Here's some resources and referrals. Mm-hmm. And that's not done. And a lot of the times you fill it out and then no one ever says anything about your score or what it means or what you can do.
No, I remember the very last time she walked in, she goes, wow, looks like you're doing great. Well, have a good day. And realizing that I actually had my first like set of like nocturnal panic attacks, like back to back. Thinking like, okay, well, I guess this is my new sleep pattern, you know, wake up anxiety that I feel like I'm the problem of my body, but she brushed it off. And so then I went on with my life, but then literally it was like, oh my goodness, Mila would have been like 3. And that's when I finally went to like a therapist and like started doing other things, but that I didn't even go related to like anxiety and like the things that I was feeling. I went for other reasons. And then that's when we started like unpacking so many things. And she was like, honey, you have anxiety. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, that makes sense.
She said I was perfectly fine.
Got it. Yeah. I think it's important for moms listening and every mom to know that you don't need a diagnosis in order to seek counseling. It's not a requirement. You don't have to be, you know, I hear a lot of moms and they say that, you know, well-intentioned people say, oh, honey, it's just because you're a new mom. It gets better. It gets better. They wait. Mm-hmm. It's not getting better. And then finally, a year, 2 years, 6 months, they get help and they're like, why didn't I do this sooner? Right? Like, I missed out on being able to be present for my kids and myself because I was struggling, but I felt like I couldn't do anything about it. It just kind of is what it is.
I love this episode already.
Yeah, I do too. It's almost just, you know, like if OBGYNs don't understand like how to handle that conversation because they weren't trained in that, it's almost empowering moms to be like, okay, so when you get that response from them, if it doesn't feel like it's validating or putting you on a path towards feeling healthy, that's when like maybe you do seek out, you know, getting your own referral for a mental health specialist or something like that. Because yeah, I think I was told like 2 years into my 4th child, oh, it's just the season that you're in. That's why you wake up and feel like you need to go back to sleep. Like, you just have a lot of kids. That's why you're tired. And I was just like, okay, I don't think that's what, you know, I don't think that's what it is. So then I started doing things on my own to figure it out. But yeah. I think other moms might not know that that's an option, that like they could do that.
Yeah. And I think the problem right now, especially, is moms think that there is this norm and that mm-hmm. they're like, it's something that they're doing, right? It's not the mm-hmm. fact that we don't have affordable childcare. It's not the fact that we're all mothering in isolation when we're not supposed to do that, right? We're supposed to have a village, literally.
Right.
We're supposed to have a village. Like, we're not supposed to be locked away in our houses mm-hmm. all day by ourselves with our kids. And then we think there's something wrong with us because we want to rip our hair out at the end of the day. Like, I love you, 3-year-old, but please go to bed.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
When it's not meant to be that way. Mm-hmm. So then moms blame themselves. And
do you think that society plays a big part in the way that we as mothers start to like think about ourselves and think about like what our actual role is and what we're supposed to be doing and supposed to be feeling?
That's one of the biggest things that I dismantle with my moms is we come into motherhood with this idea that moms should be selfless. You should lose yourself in motherhood, do everything for your kids. That's what a good mom does. Good moms, you know, home make their meals. Good moms quit their jobs so they can raise their babies. Good moms, all of these things we go into motherhood with, right? And so in the work that I do with moms, we break that all down and we get to know ourselves again and get to trust our intuition again, right? Even if that's going against the status quo, which humans want to belong, right? At the core, that's what we crave is belonging. So we would rather belong and fit in and do something that maybe doesn't feel right to us because that's what we crave is like, okay, yep, I'm a mom. Here's my minivan. Like, I've just, oh, these kids, you know, and we just kind of like go into that lane instead of taking a second to really listen to ourselves, our higher selves, on what we want out of motherhood. And that leads to resentment and depression and a bunch of sad moms.
I think we've also been given this picture of what moms should look like by society. And so when we see them, whatever this fictitious picture that they've created
yeah.
is happy and thriving, it's like we're doing something wrong then. Like something is wrong with us. Like I just need to be a better mom, not even really knowing what that means that we need to yes. do better. But yeah.
Yes.
So I love that you do that. And I'm curious, you said that there's that process for moms like entering motherhood. Mm-hmm. Is there something similar for like the partner in that situation? And do you have totally. To like bring them into that conversation whenever you're dismantling all the societal expectations?
So that's a good question. I think that this happens with partners, yes, but I think it happens at different times. Particularly if you're in a heterosexual relationship and you have a husband. My girlfriend just said it best the other day, the transition from 1 to 2 is a dad's first taste of motherhood.
Mm-hmm.
Let that sink in.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we become moms, like our life is over with number one, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
With them, it's like, yeah, it's different. But like, especially if you're breastfeeding, it's like, there's only so much they can do. You only have one kid. So like, you can go to the gym and your partner stays home.
Mm-hmm.
When we had our second, my husband was like, what the fuck? Because
yeah.
he was with the toddler 24/7, right? And I'm over here like, I haven't had a life in 3 years.
We've been doing this for a while. Yeah.
Like, welcome, dude. Like, you know? So I think it does happen. And postpartum depression does happen in men. But I think it depends on so many factors, like mm-hmm. your own unique trauma history, your own childhood, right? All that shit comes back up.
Mm-hmm.
And like in your 20s, you're like drinking and partying and avoiding all mm-hmm. of your childhood trauma. And then mm-hmm. you have a baby and you're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Deal with all of this again.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think not even realizing that's what's happening, that
yes.
like whenever you're being severely triggered by the most ridiculous things, that is what it is. Up until
yes.
recently, I hadn't even heard the term like childhood trauma, where you're,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
completely new.
And there's big T and little T, right? So big T mm-hmm. is like the big scary things, like abuse, neglect, you know, huge accidents, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Little T is, you know, having a narcissistic parent, mm-hmm. or having a parent who struggled with their own mental health and you were constantly on edge and hypervigilant, like what kind of mood mm-hmm. is dad going to be in today? Right. Mm-hmm. So we all have stuff to work through from our childhoods, mm-hmm. even if we have like the most well-intentioned parents. And that's also what I help my moms do, is become conscious of their own emotions, triggers, and things so that they can manage, you know, with me those things, and then it doesn't translate to their kids mm-hmm. and then how they parent.
That's what I was going to mention, is some people hear childhood trauma and they're like, oh, I don't have any, because they think of like the very extreme things, which I think that that's what society tells us, like, oh, you had a great childhood because you didn't go through X, Y, Z, you know? But it's yeah. like, well, there's also some other things that could be triggering the way that you're reacting, the way that you're parenting, and the way that you're feeling. So yes. I love, love, love that you mentioned that.
Yeah. And you and your siblings all had different childhoods, right? Because you have unique perspectives. Yeah, this just went nuts. Because you're a different person. You have different, mm-hmm. you know, and your family, it's so interesting when you dive into family dynamics, you know, like yeah. one is like the goody, one mm-hmm. is like the scapegoat, one is like the rebel, and we fit ourselves into these roles and we're treated mm-hmm. differently. And so you can grow up with, you know, a sibling and have the same childhood, but very mm-hmm. different experiences.
And two, I feel like we're getting different, like, different moms almost, because mm-hmm. I'm the oldest of four girls. And I feel like every one of us got almost a different taste of our mother. Totally. And so I don't think people also realize that. And I agree, like even my oldest son, like he's got a different mom than what Mila's ever mm-hmm. got. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. and what Hux is going to get, they're definitely going to get, Hux is going to have like, who's this woman?
I actually apologized to Baden the other day because I said, you know, I feel like you got a really different version of me mm-hmm. during your like toddler years, my son's 10, mm-hmm. than like the girls are getting now. And I just, you know, I just want to apologize for anything that I did that like you see me doing differently now that you're like, oh, I wish you would have done that differently. Yeah. And of course, he's just like, he's like, mom, you're literally the most perfect mom. Like, you're fine. Oh, and I was like, God. I'm not, but like, you know, let's just have a conversation. So
Right before I hopped on here, I was listening to a Stephen Furtick sermon, and he actually said, he goes, my oldest child, I have a college fund and a therapy fund for all my like trial and error that I,
yeah,
all my misgivings. I mean, yeah. I think that that's something that a lot of moms struggle with, is you got the postpartum depression version of mm-hmm. me. You know, you got the part of me that was unhealed. You got whatever. But I think it's just, it all shakes out in the end. Mm-hmm. You know, our kids are going to get different versions of us throughout their lives. And, you know, I could sit here and ruminate and beat myself up over the fact that Ellie's my firstborn, got me when I was depressed. And Jack didn't, right? We had like a beautiful postpartum period. But also Ellie got just me, and she was my sole focus. And Jack, you know, obviously she's around too. So it's like, you can do that with so many mm-hmm. things.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if they know that you love them and you support them, and that's all they need.
Okay. So I feel like that's a perfect way to transition into this question. If we are so focused on just like one, maybe like in the level of like figuring out what's even going on with me, or like if you do have an idea, like trying to manage it and not, you know, harm your child too much in the long run, all those things, like how do you spend time? Like, what is the challenge of like focusing on yourself and like finding yourself again after that, you know, whether it's the first child, second, third, or whatever?
Yeah.
How do you coach women through that? Like what are some things that you could give listeners now?
So glad you asked. I created a method of finding yourself, becoming conscious, right? That's like such a hot word right now, like conscious momming. Mm-hmm. And the beautiful thing is, you know, everyone focused so much. Have you guys heard of conscious parenting? Do you know like mm-hmm. kind of what that means? Okay. The beautiful thing is, if you become conscious in your own life, you will naturally become a conscious parent, right? Mm-hmm. Like once you shine the light on something, it can never go dark again. So once you become conscious of your thoughts, conscious of the things that you're doing, that's automatically going to translate into your parenting. Mm-hmm. So that's a beautiful thing about doing the work just on yourself, is you also become a better parent, mm-hmm. right? And the way that I do that is I created something called Soul Time. And this is what I did when I was postpartum with Ellie during nap times. And I would sit down for like 30 minutes. I would light a candle. I would journal. I started to meditate, which if you knew me before kids, I was like sitting still for 10 minutes. Good fucking luck. Like no way I'm doing that. But I actually found spirituality in motherhood as well. I started meditating and I was like, I don't, whoever is up there, whatever is there, like, please help me. I need help. Spirituality doesn't have to play a part in Soul Time, but if you're religious, you know, whatever entity you ascribe to can totally be incorporated. And it's basically a time to just be with yourself and reflect on how you're feeling, right? And that helps you become conscious of your thoughts and feelings. It's slowing down because we're so overstimulated in motherhood. It's taking time to, you know, stretch. I would stretch, I would breathe. And that is really where I found myself again. And at first it was like almost painful to like sit and sit still and do that. But then it became somewhere where I craved it. I was like, oh, I haven't done Soul Time in a while. Like I need to go. And do you know what's funny is as a kid, as an adolescent, did you ever like go into your room and like turn on Dashboard Confessional and like cry about your ex-boyfriend or like write in your journal? And like, you really got into like, right? Like we were like moody teenagers. That's exactly what we're channeling in Soul Time.
Love that. I love that because I thought a lot because I've been listening to a lot of old Taylor Swift because she's
yes,
so girl. Brings back childhood memories. And I'm like, in like her song 15, she says in a lot of songs, but she talks about like having no, like there's just nothing that you really have to worry about, like no responsibility. And I think it's so much easier for us to channel that like in our teen years, even though in our teen years, we're like, oh my God, we have so much going on. Like the weight of the world is on our shoulders.
Yes.
And now Tiana, like obviously you experienced a lot more of big T trauma in teenage years. So I don't want to say that and just be like, everyone was so privileged in their teen years. It really makes a difference. And so I think when we sit down and like try to do those things, it's like, if you have anxiety, you're like, well, I can't do it because like, you know, there's kinetic sand all over the countertop or like I need to clean up after dinner or whatever, all those things, even though that's your only spot in the day to do that, like to sit down and meditate. And, but as teenagers, like we didn't have to do those things. So it was so much easier. It was just like what we did. So how would you tell a mom to be like, no, you like, I know you said it was painful for you to just sit down. Is it really just kind of like picking your heart? Like it's going to continue being hard if you don't do this. And it's going to be hard when you first do it, you know?
Yeah. So speaking of creating time for it, I have something called a mom schedule, and mom stands for more of me. So it's this whole process I go through with my clients where we sit down literally with an Excel sheet and I have them fill out their day, like their non-negotiables, nap times, feeding times, when you go to bed, everything that's the same every day. And then, because I hear all the time, like, well, I don't have time for Soul Time. You know, I'm a busy mom, blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, okay, put your money where your mouth is, mama. And we fill out the Excel sheet. And I'm like, what do you do during these, you know, 2 hours after bed, after your kids go to bed? Netflix, scrolling, you know, whatever. And yeah, you do have time for Soul Time, but it's hard to like, we're all just in a habit. Everything is a habit. And all you have to do is break the habit. Right. So I work with them. We create time in their schedule. They do Soul Time. And then what was your original question now? My mom brain literally just.
Basically, like, how do you tell it? Like, you find the time, but how do you sit down and say, like, well, okay, I found this 15-minute pocket.
Yeah. So timers are a beautiful thing that I use all of the time to get ready. Like, it just keeps me on task. It motivates me. And I think as moms, we're like, I don't have time for that. I got to do, you know, I got to do this. I got to do that. So set a timer for start with 5 minutes. Right? Start with something super manageable. Mm-hmm. I always tell my moms, aim for tolerable discomfort, not panic attack. Right? So the thought of sitting down for 30 minutes, if that's like, oh my God, like I could never do that, 5 minutes. And until that's like, okay, this is easy, like I can definitely do 5 minutes, then we extend it to 8 minutes and we extend it to 10 minutes. And shoot for it once a week at first.
Yeah. My point is I want to go all in. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it every single day for 1 hour a day. And then I fail.
I know. I can't do that.
Yes.
Yes.
So small, the starting slow.
Achievable goals. Have you guys heard of SMART goals?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, frick, I don't even remember what it stands for. But basically, make it attainable, make it realistic, make it at the same time. Like, Tiana, your goal is going to be one soul time this week.
Yeah.
Just one. And then if you do more, great. You get extra credit. Like, you go, girl. But you achieve your goal doing it once, and then we get that little confidence boost.
Yeah.
Right? As opposed to feeling like a failure because we didn't do it every day for an hour.
Yeah.
And I think you can adapt that to literally everything. Like, we struggled with that during the first year, really, too, of our business, where we made these, we had such an successful launch that we were like, all right, well, our goal is going to be like three times that.
Yep.
The amount of work that we were putting in every day was equivalent to burnout in the long run. Like, it wasn't sustainable. It worked for the launch period, especially in 2020 when the world was, you know, on pause. But yeah, so we had to completely change that, and then also spend a lot of time focusing on the wins that we did make, even though they seemed a lot smaller than what we were winning at the beginning, but celebrating those. So I think what you said too about like getting the motivation from like checking off the 1 minute, 5 minute thing, like celebrating that, even though you want to see yourself doing 30 minutes or an hour or whatever, because it's just not realistic to jump in and do that even every time once you're comfortable with it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. A lot of us are perfectionists as women. A lot of us are all or nothing. We think black and white. I either failed or I crushed it. And those are like the only two options. And you have to remember that the way that you look at things is a choice, right? So I am choosing to view this as a failure. There's another choice. You could say, hooray, I did something, right? I think we're used to thinking that if we need to shame ourselves in order to do better, right? Like, come on, bitch, you gotta, come on. Like,
that's me.
That's not enough, right? And that doesn't do anything besides make us feel like shit about ourselves. And then who's motivated to do things if we feel like crap about ourselves and our self-esteem's in the dumpster?
That's what I mean. I like talk to myself just like that. And I'm like, what the fuck am I doing?
But then she'll get on the phone with me and be like, it's okay, Ariel. Like, you need to take a break. You're going to burn yourself out.
I know. I mean, that's all of us, right? And for me, I used to think that I needed to reach a certain level of like enlightenment and like therapy and all of this, and then I'd love myself. But I realized I had to love myself first, and then I could do all of the things. I can't do anything without self-compassion, like true self-compassion, not like it's okay, like, you know, you're still great, like truly loving myself and all of my parts, right? We all have different parts, so like, we have this like inner teenager in us, right? So that's why when we do soul time, that like feels good and like reminiscent. We're like, oh my God, yes. I want to like
Taylor
and cry about Taylor Swift. Yes.
100%. So I love that, because to me, it roots all still back to like really like the patriarchy and just like societal expectations.
It's always the patriarchy.
Yeah. And I think you shared something the other day that was like, you know, moms always get asked or told like, how do you keep the house so clean? But like, when has a dad ever been asked that? And I went to bed thinking about that last night, and it almost made me mad at my husband, even though he's not the cause of that.
Her husband's great. But I think actually, like,
you know, you get asked that and you're like, you're right, I do keep the house so clean. So then it becomes like a part of, at least like me, like that's my identity, is like my house is always clean. And so then I get anxiety around it when it's not. And I think that is one reason why it's so hard to get lost in motherhood, is because we seek our validation from these societal expectations or whatever that we hinged everything on. And then you have men walking around just like validating themselves for doing whatever during the day. Could be very small, could be very big.
To the grocery store, like if we take, you know, if I take all of my kids to the grocery store, no one's, people are, I mean, I do get comments like, wow, you got your hands full. Are those
right. We get negative backhanded comments.
But like a dad does it. They're like, wow, look at you go, dad. Yeah. And it's like,
you're such a good dad.
Yeah. Right.
And that post, the first time I posted it, went viral and got like 200,000 likes or something. And how many fragile male egos entered the chat was bananas. Because they didn't understand like the root of it, right? And the root of it is exactly that, what you were saying, Ariel, is we are born into motherhood with these expectations imposed on us. And so I'm trying to break all of these stigmas, and I call it like modern motherhood, right? Like this is, we are a bunch of moms who are doing the work. We are finally shedding societal expectations that are literally ancient. Like it's not 1950. We don't need to wear an apron. We don't need to have, like, we all know that, like logically, rationally, but our subconscious has been primed our entire lives with, you know, you watch a movie, and what's a good mom in a movie? Like we can all imagine it, right? And then we can all imagine the like bitchy mom who's like a lawyer and like doesn't go to her kids' soccer games. Like that's how it's portrayed. And that's in our that sits in our subconscious, right? So we can say like, I don't need a clean house to be a good mom. But then our subconscious is like, yes, you fucking do. You better get cleaning. You better get dusting, you know? So listening to those subconscious thoughts and being like, oh, I actually don't agree with that. Like that's part of like, you know, I do a lot of values building with my moms. Like, what do you value? Not society, but like, what do you value? And what do you think is important?
That makes me so angry to think about, because I don't think I've ever been asked that, like as a young adult, you know, like, what do you, like, why do you value this because it's something that you value or because you've been told to value? But I know for a fact, and my husband was raised by a very like empowering mom who like was really good at giving him confidence, even though like I don't think men inherently need that, but like,
they're
she
good.
Did a good job of they're doing good. That. And so he's got that under wraps. And so like, I'll get frustrated whenever, you know, the house isn't clean, since we're writing on that example, and he'll be like, is that important to you? Or do you just feel like it needs to be done? Because I don't think it needs to be done right now. Not because I don't want to do it, just because like, I see the house and it's clean enough to me. So like, it doesn't stress me out. But if it's stressing you out because it's like a thing that you value, or it's because you feel like someone's going to come over and like judge you for it, there's a difference. And like, I don't think women are as much raised to have that thought process. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I, you know, a good example is my own marriage where like, listen, I will cook, but like, I'd rather not, you know, I would just rather not. And my husband loves it. And my values, my core says, well, I just hit the jackpot because your girl doesn't want to cook. But then my subconscious comes in and is like, am I a bad wife if I don't cook? Right? Like, isn't that my job to cook? So I need to constantly push that voice away and say, no, no, this works for me and my family. This is what we're doing going forward, right? Because logical, rational me is like, hell yeah, I'm not in the kitchen all the time. Like, I don't need to be in there, you know? But then there's that little voice sometimes. Or I remember when we first got married, one of his, one of my husband's friends was talking about how his wife makes him lunch every day. And I was like, am I supposed to do that? I don't want to do that, but should I be doing that?
I don't want to do that.
Right? So it's like listening to those voices, and journaling is like so helpful.
And to comparing yourself, I mean, I think everybody, even men, compare themselves to other men, but especially I feel like women do, like looking at other moms or other wives. Like, and I was literally just going to ask you that question because I have my, it sounds weird saying it, my husband is like the sweetest, kindest, like he doesn't expect, I don't even think anything out of me. He just, it's just love.
Just stay there.
He told me yesterday before he went to bed, because yesterday I didn't have the kids. So I was like head down and like, I'm going to get a bunch of work done today then. And I didn't do laundry. And he was like, oh, do you know what those workout pants wear? I immediately freak out. And I'm like, oh my God, they're dirty. I got to get them done. And by this time it's like 9 o'clock at night. So what do? I put them in the washer and I set an alarm to wake up to switch.
Oh, bless your heart, honey.
And then I get up and he goes, what are you doing? And I go, I told you I was going to make sure those are done. And he was like, I told you I found clothes. And I was just like, no, that's not okay. Like, I'm a new wife. Like, I can't. Yeah.
Oh, Tiana.
Then, yeah, this morning he told me, he goes, don't ever do that again. And I go, okay.
See, I would have done the complete opposite. Oh my God. Yeah. For the like most ridiculous reasons, I would have been like, as soon as that question would have been asked me, like, I don't know, you have eyeballs, go look in the laundry room and find them yourself. Even though, like, if I would have just said, like, I don't know, he would have gone and done that. It's just like my immediate like resentment is like, nope, you go figure it out. I don't know.
I like immediately like filled with, and I probably have some trauma from my past with that, but
yeah,
I just immediately got scared. I'm like, oh my God, like I am a bad wife. Like what am I 3 weeks in and I'm already forgetting to wash his clothes.
It's the best when you get mad at your husband for like, or you feel guilt over something and then you get mad at like, I'll get mad at Sean about something and he'll be like, I don't give a shit if you do that or not. And I'm like, yes, you do, because every man does, because that's what I've been shown. You know, like the poor guy, he's like, I don't care if the laundry isn't done. Like, I will do it. It's fine. Mm-hmm. And I remember when we first had Ellie and I was struggling with leaving and doing things for myself, but he'd be like, hey, babe, is it cool if I go to the gym? I'm like, yes, it was cool. But I'd be like, sure, motherfucker. Must be nice. You know? Must be nice to just walk outside and go to the gym. And he was like, he finally was like, you know, you can go too. And I was like, okay. Right. And I realized that was me preventing myself and it was my own guilt. It had nothing to do with him. He was happy to watch her while I went to the gym.
Yeah.
Me feeling like I couldn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I held on to mine for a long time too. And, you know, since I was 21, whenever we had our first child, my husband were the same age. So he was also 21. And, you know, we had a baby, like we weren't ready. Like it was neither one of us signed up for it, you know? Yeah. So kind of like what we talked about earlier, like as a mother, you're kind of shoved into that responsibility. Like you do have a choice, but like naturally, like it's all sped up a little bit faster.
We're going to
take some time. And we have a podcast episode on Zared talks about like how long it took him and everything. But I do think that like that maturity would have sped up for him more if I wouldn't have internalized my guilt and been like, kind of like what you're saying. And just every time he would do something, get angry inside and like let the resentment sit there and simmer instead of explaining to him. And I'm sure it would have taken some time and been frustrating conversations because he just didn't see it quite the same.
Yeah.
But just sharing that and being like, this is what I need from you. Even if you don't understand why I'm feeling that, your partner should listen and accept that and like make that possible for you.
Yeah.
So
one of the best things I do is tell my husband, I'll be like, listen, I feel like I can't do anything for myself. It has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with society and unrealistic expectations. But will you just make a point of saying that it's okay for me to do this for a little bit, right? So I'll be like, okay, I'm going to go to the gym. And he'll be like, cool, take your time, right? Because he knows that. So he's supporting me in that. And he's saying, yes, you should do that. You should go. Instead of, you know, I think a lot of my moms feel this way. We ask them to do something and they're like, or they're like frustrated because like, you know, it's not that they don't want to watch the baby or they don't, it's just like their own shit, you know, like maybe he had other plans, maybe, I don't know, but him supporting me in making those choices and knowing that I'm anxious about it is super helpful.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I do want to mention, just cause you know, that's where I am always talking to women that are in situations that they're not, they don't have supportive partners or partners that they can even like say this to, or maybe their partners are putting really, really high expectations on them. And that's where it's coming from. And they don't have a choice into not waking up and switching those, you know, the laundry over, that I would definitely seek therapy and talk to somebody if you cannot talk to your husband.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I wish that a lot of these conversations happened before kids, but it's almost like you don't really know until you know. And a lot of the moms that I work with their relationship was perfect before kids, you know, no issues, like everything was great. And then you have kids and all of a sudden you realize that he was shown that a mom does everything in the house. And now he's watching TV while you're in the kitchen and you're like, what the fuck is happening? Like, how? I didn't sign up for this, right? And sometimes it's not even, you both just fall into patterns, right? If he was modeled that as a kid, hopefully if he's a supportive spouse and you bring it up, he could be like, oh, that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. You're right. I am acting that way, but I don't want to. That's just kind of like how I was raised and like what's natural to me. I encourage everyone to have Sunday check-ins with their partner, especially in the postpartum period and then throughout. And you talk about your week. You talk about how you're feeling. You talk about how you're parenting. Just to make sure that everyone's on the same page about things.
I love this. I love this episode. I feel like I just got like 4 hours. I mean, we've not even been talking for 4 hours. I feel like I've been in therapy for like 4 hours straight. I learned so much.
Yay. I'm so glad. I actually just launched a membership. It's called the Mamahood Membership, and it's for all of this with other moms, right? Like doing the work, learning all, like you have access to all of my resources. I hop in there on live coaching calls. I do workshops on soul time, on the mom schedule, Sunday check-ins. So I'm really excited about it because I don't feel like there's a place for moms or people just to like, for personal development, you know, like to work on yourself. So I'm really excited about that.
Love that.
I also wanted to add, cause I feel like we've covered a lot. And one of the things I was going to ask you, but I think we've kind of covered it, is how do you stay on social media, because it's, you know, some people's way of like escaping and things like that, and just staying connected, really, like if yeah. like finding a community and not falling into a hole of comparing yourself to these other moms who might not be doing anything wrong, but like what works for their family is just completely different from yours. So one, I think everyone should follow you, and we can put your Instagram in the notes so that they can do that. But how would you do that? Like if someone started following you or me or Tiana or whatever, and our lives just looked completely different, and then they started feeling that ping of like comparison or guilt, or I want it to look like that. Like how would they dissect, or should they just not follow people like that? Like, what would you say?
Yeah. So a couple things come to mind. One, I actually have a guide on how to navigate social media and not be triggered. Two, delete the app, because at the end of the day, the people who built these apps, they built it to be addictive, right? Mm-hmm. So it's unreasonable to think that you can log on to Instagram and not be triggered, mm-hmm. right? If you're in a bad place, if you're not in a very good space, like you're anxious, you're going through a lot, I would just stay away. That's why I built my membership on Circle. It's a completely different app. If you're looking at photos, and like you said, it could be just like with the family, you know, at Disney World, you could be like, great, I never go to Disney World with my family. Like I never do anything with my kids, you know, like it's just human nature, and you're fighting a losing battle. So like, take a break, make Instagram not on your home screen. Track, you know, or set limits for yourself. Like I can only go on Instagram after 7 p.m. or, you know, during one nap that the kids are in. Set a timer. I can scroll for 5 minutes, but, and good Lord, stay away from the explore page. It is not an explore page. Sure. It is a trigger page. Whatever you're struggling with in life is going to be on that explore page. Yeah. Okay. Just,
I always like to ask myself when I'm being like super triggered by something on social media, and normally it's people that have like home pages with their home decor and all their like wide aesthetic. And I'm like, and I always ask myself, why am I being so triggered by this? And it's because I'm like, oh, I love their house. Not that my house is not great, but it's just like you start comparing everything that you have down to like I got a new set of kitchen knives. Why? Because I saw this other girl had it. I was like, I love that. I want them.
Yeah.
So we start comparing things. And like, I like to ask myself that, but I think that comes with like, yes, getting in a healthier headspace to be able to ask yourself, like, why am I being triggered? Why is this triggering me? And like understanding like really all of your triggers, because we all have triggers. But yeah, I think that it took me a long time too, though, to get to that place to be able to ask myself.
Yeah. Cause I would explore thinking that I was doing myself a justice of being like, okay, you need to find yourself again. Like, let's find some things that you connect with and like that you want to do. And it would be things that like, I wasn't healed enough to know, do I want to do that? Cause I actually want to do it, because I feel like I'm being told I need to do that or whatever. So I love that you just kind of called it out for what it is and said, like, if you're not in a healthy place, just don't get on it. And I love that you are so smart to like put your community on a different app. That's genius. So
it's like, it's such a beautiful thing to like genuinely have people comment back to things and like mean it. And like, here's the thing. It's going to make me emotional. Moms are like the most amazing humans on the planet. And we can show up for one another. And that's like the village, right? That's the village. We had that. We had aunties and moms and grandmothers and friends. Like, we were all together mothering. You're not meant to mother alone. And we're all doing it alone. And we all think there's something wrong with us. There's nothing wrong with you. It's society. It's not your fault. So having this space to come and like want to grow and want to learn and not tear each other down. And listen, if there's someone that enters the chat and tears people down, like, she out. We're not. I have zero tolerance policy. It's all about supporting one another. So I'm really happy to have that space. And I also have to be realistic that like, I still need my Instagram. Cause like, that's how you guys found me. Like, there are good things about the app, but it's also a dumpster fire a lot of the time.
Yeah. I think you got to remember, you have control over it. It doesn't have control over you. Like, you can stop posting if you need to stop posting and still try to connect with people that you like connecting with. So I love that.
I just want to say like, thank you for, I mean, I literally keep saying this, but like, this is probably one of my favorite episodes it's perfect timing, because like, I'm over here like, am I going to lose myself? Like, I literally call Ariel and I'm like, what if I get postpartum anxiety? What if I can't get out of bed? And she's like, you gotta count. So I think this is like the perfect episode. Can you tell us all the places that they can find you? I know you have a podcast.
Yeah. So TheHonestPeach.com is where you can find all of the things. I'm on Instagram at TheHonestPeach. I have a podcast called No Mama Left Behind that I co-host with the Pelvic Floor PT. And we are similar to you guys. We just tell it how it is. We curse. We talk about like real mom things, but then we also bring our professional training in our respective fields. So listen to No Mama Left Behind. Just message me, shoot me a message on Instagram. I'm happy to chat. And thank you guys for having me on.
This was awesome. Thanks for joining. We will put all these things in the show notes for sure. Check them out. And I am going to check out the community too. So I hope everyone else does too.
Yay.
Thanks for hanging out with us on the Call Us Mommy podcast.
If you want to spend more time with us, make sure to hit follow. And if you like the episode, share with a friend and leave a review.